The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, back inside the Beltway. Good Wednesday morning to you, live inside the Beltway. Yesterday was one of those great cross-country days. And I mean great cross-country days. You say, how is that possible? Well, I got to the airport early, fetching Mrs. Hewitt, since she had come out at a different time, was on a different flight back. And so we were in separate airports, using separate airplanes to get to the same place at the same time. So that meant one major change in my travel is that I was alone in the airport for 2 hours before the flight, because I'm a two-hour guy, and I'm alone on the airplane, and I have basically a stretch of 8 hours to just read, absorb, and think, talk to no one. That's the great advantage of masks on planes. Everyone sort of shut up, and nobody, none of your neighbors talks to you, right, in the age of virus. One of the very few silver linings in its nightmare is that nobody tries to talk to you on airplanes anymore. And I finished David Drucker's In Trump's Shadow. I listened to nearly the complete end of The Fugitivities by Jesse McCarthy. Listened to an hour of Buckeye Talk. And Buckeye Talk is hosted by Doug Lesmeres, who you hear on the show on Friday in the College Football Playoff Show segment. And Nathan Baird and Stephen Means. And then you mix all that up, jumble it all up with today's rundown, and you realize nobody knows much at all, but you eventually have to get a lesson first. All right, a lesson first. What is a lesson first? That's the first thing you learn when you're a Catholic kid in the first day of first grade in 1965, whatever year I guess it would be 62, that I go to first grade. That's the Baltimore Catechism Lesson 1. There are 9, 10. I can't remember how many different things are in the Lesson 1, but that's what things like, why are we on earth? To know, love, and serve God. So everybody ends up with a few Lesson 1s and a few areas of expertise, and if they start talking shop outside of it, Drucker's book is so deeply, magnificently detailed about the Republican field for president. I know a lot of these people pretty well. I mean, Senator Cotton, Secretary Pompeo, I've known these guys for more than a decade and have talked with them for a long time. I learned a great deal about both men. I've known Vice President Pence for, I would guess, 25 years. I learned a great deal about Vice President Pence. I report politics for a living. I do politics and government. You know, the show is 90% current events, breaking news, politics, and 10% sports. Culture's in the politics, of course. Culture's upstream from politics. And then 10%, maybe 5%, Cleveland Browns, Indians, and Cavaliers. Ben had a good NBA fantasy draft last night because he got Colin Sexton, but I'll come back to that in a bit. And outside of your areas of expertise, you really need to study more and listen more, not talk more or assume more. But that is actually the opposite direction we're heading in as we become more siloed, with tunnels and freeways between us. There are some tunnels you don't know about. People are talking to each other, my Democratic tunnels. And there are some freeways where you move from Ohio State land to GOP land to China Hawk land. Here's lesson one, lesson first. We are in a Cold War with China, and it is deadly serious, and we're not treating it that way. It's as though we did not engage in the Cold War with the Soviet Union from the very beginning. And in that Cold War, we're in a position of strength. So I'm going to replay in segment three today my interview in the first hour today the interview I did in the last hour yesterday with Senator Tom Cotton because of the lead story in the Washington Post, in my view. Right? It should be the lead story in the Washington Post. It is the lead story in the world, and it is the lead story every day in the world. China's test of hypersonic vehicle is part of a program to rapidly expand strategic and nuclear systems. And this made the front page of the Post at, you know, it's at 5:45 p.m., Ellen Nakashima. And everything Ellen tells you is correct, but she's just slow. But I'm glad that the media is waking up to what in the last year of the Trump administration, a series of five speeches that began with Vice President Pence and included FBI Director Wray and then Attorney General Barr and then National Security Advisor Robert C. O'Brien and then finally Secretary of State Mike Pompeo when he was still Secretary of State at the Nixon Library. They laid it all out. So the smart people have known for a while this is a deadly serious competition between civilizations. And there are going to be two winners. China seeks the Finlandization of the world. You know, Russia insisted on the Finlandization of Finland when it was the Soviet Union and Finland was Finland. They had to be basically at the beck and call of Russia. Free, sort of, kind of. And that's what the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, wants for the world. And the world is waking up to that. So the rundown today, I'm going to do right now. But understand that lesson one is that we are in a new Cold War with China. And we have to begin to teach people this and emphasize this and talk about the specifics. Because the only way we won the last Cold War, the first Cold War. Remember, there was a first World War One, then a second World War. Now we had a first Cold War. Now we're in the second Cold War. And I think historians will note this probably when General Secretary Xi ascended to his permanent general secretaryship of the Chinese Communist Party. I think that's when it will date to, because he had a plan. That guy had a plan. That guy is brilliant, by the way. He is really smart. That makes him very dangerous. And we have to start acting like that. And broadcasts have to be informed by that. And the news really should pivot off of that. And what David Drucker discovered is that the essential, whether or not President Trump runs, whoever will be the nominee, they must be a combative constitutionalist conservative and committed to confronting the left in all of its forms. A committed constitutional combative conservative. And probably the most important thing is combative constitutional. Drucker has got this down, and the people who are the serious leaders in the GOP have this down as well. And it all begins with just saying, first and foremost, we are in the second Cold War with the Chinese Communist Party, and we're not getting out of it soon. Everything else is secondary to that. And we have a very inept national security team right now. There are a couple of rising stars that you might be able to hope for. In the Congress, the Democratic Party is absolutely weak and out of touch with everything. There are a couple of people left, like Angus King. Mike Gallagher and I will talk about this later today. There are a few people you can rely on, but basically Democratic Party doesn't get it. Even if they weren't hopelessly out of touch with the 74 million people that voted for Trump and a lot of the 80 million people that voted for Biden, even if they weren't hopelessly cut off from common sense, even if they were not in the thrall of the squad and the incoherent, it's not really a dogma. There's an incoherent TikTok quality to their politics, so it makes it really impossible to describe. It doesn't matter. Lesson one. We are in the second Cold War with China, deadly serious. And that's what fugitivities added to this conversation. Buckeye Talk just made it very obvious to me. There are so many silos about which we don't know anything. If you listen to Buckeye Talk yesterday, it's just Stephen and it's Stephen Means isn't there. It's Douglas Maurice and Nathan Baird. And they spend an hour and 41 minutes talking about the Ohio State Buckeyes six games this year. An hour and 41 minutes, and I was riveted. Riveted. They're very smart, very funny, very self-deprecating, self-aware professionals doing their job. And the idea that I know anything about Ohio State other than I hope they win is just stupid. It's like them trying to tell Dwayne how to produce a radio show. They would have no more idea how to do what Dwayne is doing right now. That's not a podcast. They're very good at podcasts. But you understand how closely related those things are? Journalists doing podcasts, journalists doing a news show. Dwayne and I in the latter category. Because this is a new show. And the degree and depth of knowledge in both of those silos is profoundly, it goes way deep. But you can't have both. There just isn't enough hours in the day. Now, here's the rundown. Just to make sense of these headlines, what do you have to know? Bennett meets UAE, Bahrain envoys, is invited to Abu Dhabi for state visit. America's political and business elites no longer agree on China. Democrats scaling back budget bill, press for compromise by week's end. Biden tells Democrats that package up to $1.9 trillion to be new target of talks. Republicans set to block voting bill again, raging states on filibuster. Nebraska congressman indicted on campaign finance question. Squid Game boosts Netflix third quarter subscriber goes. Facebook is planning to rebrand the company with a new name. Ron DeSantis has won the COVID wars comparatively to other governors in the blue states. GE Union Pacific mandate COVID-19 vaccine. The booster jab rollout in Great Britain is falling behind, and there's a fifth wave. In tackling China's real estate bubble, Xi Jinping faces resistance to property tax plan. All right, that's the rundown. How does anyone cope with this? I'll tell you on the next segment. Then do listen to Senator Cotton's interview from yesterday. You've got to hear it. Stay tuned.
Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin and Resveratrol Omega. Temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains. Temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains. And you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by Congressman Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin. Good morning, Congressman. How are you?
Good to be with you, Hugh. Sorry about those Browns. Last place in the AFC North. That's got to hurt. That
Congressman Gallagher,
hurt.
The number
is 5-1.
The number is 10. What does the number 10 signify?
I don't know where this is going.
That's the number of playoff losses by Brett Favre for the Packers. He also lost one as a Viking. But Brett Favre lost 10 playoff games. Baker Mayfield has only lost one. And already people are comparing him with two dislocated shoulders, popped back in and playing to the new Brett Favre. I'm not worried about the Browns at all, Congressman. We got Brett Favre's soul is living in Cleveland.
Brett Favre's soul will always reside in Green Bay, Wisconsin, despite a brief detour to the Vikings, which we forgot.
That's what I'm saying. When he went to the Vikings, he loosed his spirit animal upon the world, and it ended up with Mayfield. I'm telling you, it's Brett Favre. So, Congressman, I'm very happy this morning for a very weird reason. Tom Friedman writes a column warning about China in the New York Times. A lead story in the Financial Times says America's political class is divided from its business class over China. And Ellen Nicholson, I say it wrong, in the Washington Post front page, we're in a cold war with China, basically. Do you think the other side has woken up to the fact that we're in the second cold war?
Well, I think the Chinese Communist Party is making it very hard to ignore that fact. And what's interesting, I wrote a Wall Street Journal op-ed arguing that we were in a new cold war with China last year. And I pointed out in part that the pushback is always from the Chinese Communist Party. They say we have a Cold War mentality. And I think they get so exercised about this because they don't want us to realize that we are in and act as if we are in an existential competition. They'd rather us default back to the cooperative framework that allows them to advance their military program, that allows them to advance their Belt and Road agenda, that allows them to practice economic coercion and global united front work. Meanwhile, we pursue naively grand bargains with the Chinese on things like climate change or stability on the Korean Peninsula or nonproliferation, all of which they have been bad actors on. And so, yes, we are in a new Cold War. That does not mean it's identical to the old Cold War. As we've talked about, what makes this in many ways more complex than the old Cold War with the Soviet Union is that our economies are so thoroughly intertwined. And that's why one of the biggest steps we need to take is to selectively decouple our economy from China's. And this, I think, is where there's still a divide within the parties right now. I think the Democrats are unwilling to do some very important things because of their donors on Wall Street and because of their natural constituencies with university endowments and state worker pension funds. We need to be prohibiting university endowments and state and local pension funds from investing in China in general and China tech in particular. And we need those on Wall Street who are lecturing us about global ESG investing to recognize the hypocrisy and the fact that China stinks on the E, the S, and the G. And if the G stands for anything, it should stand for genocide. But Larry Fink and BlackRock and others on Wall Street have yet to grasp that basic fact.
I don't know that Silicon Valley gets it either from everything that I've read. But Congressman, in the aftermath of the public knowledge of the hypersonic launch on a Long March missile,
meaning that we are a step behind. Now, your friend and colleague, Senator Cotton, did not seem as alarmed as many other people I'm talking about. Maybe you also are less alarmed because maybe we're not as far behind and there isn't the missile gap that I think exists there. We're about to spend another $2 trillion minimum, maybe 1.9 at the low end. Can you get any of your Democratic colleagues to spend any of this on strategic defense, whether it's Columbia class, whether it's opening shipyards in Maine, Angus King put up your hand, whatever you guys did in the solarium, you ought to be able to get that all funded in this bill. Where is Angus King?
Well, one bright spot in the House Armed Services Committee, we did have a pretty strong bipartisan vote to raise the defense top line. Remember, the Biden administration submitted a defense budget that was completely inadequate, that would have cut the Navy, that made no strategic sense. And as I wrote about in the Washington Post a couple weeks ago, my concern is that now the new forthcoming Pentagon strategy, Secretary Austin's forthcoming national defense strategy, is going to be based on this concept of integrated deterrence, which is really a vacuous buzz phrase that's intended to act as a smokescreen for cutting hard defense, cutting conventional deterrent capabilities and strategic capabilities as well. That being said, on the committee, there are some Democrats like Elaine Lurie and, others who were willing to vote with us to raise the top line. That's a good thing. I would say when it comes to hypersonics, I didn't hear what Senator Cotton said, but I'm very alarmed. I do think this is a Sputnik moment. The fact that they have had hypersonic weapons for the DF-21 and DF-26 for years, while we're still years away from initial operating capability when the Army gets its weapons, should alarm all of us. And for your listeners, I know you know this, but what makes these weapons so dangerous is not just that they can fly fast, it's that they can maneuver while flying very fast, which completely undermines our early warning systems, our homeland defense. We're not just talking about their ability to threaten Taiwan. We're talking about their ability to threaten ports in America, major American cities. So we should be alarmed. This should be a wake-up call. But instead, we seem asleep at the wheel. And the Biden administration is simply not attacking this with the urgency that we need.
I should say, Senator Cotton is alarmed. He is not surprised. That's how he presented it to me. But he's on the Intel committee. So I want to ask you, Congressman, do you think what percentage of people in Wisconsin think it's even possible that they might wake up some morning to learn that 100 hypersonic missiles had hit every carrier that was deployed, all the boomers that were above water and port facility, and that the Chinese were not expecting a war? They were just expecting a strategic strike at our defenses, non-nuclear. What percentage of Wisconsinites believe a Pearl Harbor of the 21st century is real?
You know, Hugh, I fear that it's a very low percentage, 5-10%. And honestly, I think particularly those in the financial community, particularly those in the business community who are making money in China, look at the risk of a confrontation over Taiwan and they consider it a very distant tail risk. When I sort of say, hey, you got Admiral Davidson saying this thing's going to pop off in the next 6 years, the CNO agreed, as did the Commandant of the Marine Corps, they tend to dismiss that as just kind of the ravings of national security hawks. I think that's misguided. I think particularly after Xi Jinping pockets the massive propaganda victory of hosting the Olympics in Beijing in a few months, I think things could get very, very testy over Taiwan. And I think we need to do a better job of making the case to Wisconsinites as to why this matters. I was actually
I want to interrupt you for a second. Do you believe, please, however small the probability, that there is a potential for that kind of a surprise attack on America's strategic assets that the CCP would consider short of war? It's the Stavridis scenario. It's what 2034 is all about. The limited strike that just sort of cripples America's will. Maybe a carrier, maybe more carriers, maybe all carriers. Do you think Xi thinks that way?
I think the most likely strategy they're pursuing, as Bridge Colby, I think, lays out very well in his book that was just released, Strategy of Denial, is a fait accompli strategy. So essentially, they move very rapidly.
Right.
Exactly. To establish facts on the ground before we can do anything or pursue very creative measures, like over a period of a couple months, flying in, people on civilian airlines into Taiwan, kind of a quasi little green man scenario. But in either scenario, I think they will be able to very rapidly move overwhelm our early warning systems and overwhelm Taiwan's indigenous defense systems. And that could get very...
I'm not talking Taiwan. I'm talking Pearl Harbor. Yep. And for my youth, we all grew up thinking that that was possible. You know, I don't remember the Cuban Missile Crisis, but that's second grade. People thought that was always a possibility, however remote, and that you had to prepare for that little probability. I think the difference between Cold War I and Cold War II, that Americans don't think about preemptive strikes anymore. They just don't even believe it's possible.
And I think, there's this quote from the Korean War where General MacArthur is talking to the Senate and he says, it's wrong to believe that war can be applied in a piecemeal way, that you can make half war, not whole war. I think we tend to think that they'll engage in some sort of half war, but I'm not sure that quite is getting it right. I think you could expect in a confrontation with China that if deterrence really fails, they'll wage a whole war. Now, it may not be a nuclear war, but it will include shutting down exports of critical goods. It will include attacking our critical infrastructure with cyber weapons. It will include spreading disinformation on social media to destroy our will to fight, to say nothing about the conventional threats that you outlined to American carriers and ships and things like that. I think there is almost nothing that Xi wouldn't do to effectuate unification of Taiwan with the mainland. Even if, as Oriana Mastro and others have written, even if it results in him giving up half or more of the PLA's Navy, he's willing to pay a high price.
I believe that is correct. I believe that's correct. But I also think he has a goal beyond that, which is the Finlandization of the world. The way that he's Finlandized Hollywood, the way that he's Finlandized Silicon Valley. He's a genius, by the way. I'm not taking anything away from Chairman Xi. But do you, with the sort of the advent of a recognition that there's a second Cold War, does the American media understand, last question to you, understand Xi? I think this is the whole key. One guy can do this.
No, and I fear throughout the pandemic, the legacy media in America has been acting as useful idiots for the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, you have people, Chuck Todd and others, praising early on in the pandemic the way the Chinese handled their pandemic response.
Yeah, but Chuck is now a realist. I talked to Chuck. He's now a realist. I think all the big media is a realist. I don't know if our audiences, though, are aware of what that means.
Yeah, and I think people in public office need to do a better job, myself included, of connecting what can seem like abstract concerns about Taiwan or Xinjiang province, the Uyghur Autonomous Region in Xinjiang, to everyday life of Wisconsinites and even Ohioans going forward, and why this is something we all need to be worried about, and why you should be offended when a hostile foreign power is able to coerce major American industries, whether it's the NBA or Hollywood, right? I mean, that should offend every single American. We need to mobilize in a bipartisan fashion Americans to start taking charge of the situation and invest resources in our defense before it's too late.
Very quick last cheek question. Senator Cotton brought to my attention what I did not know, that every major news organization in the United States has a complicated relationship like Hollywood's with the Chinese Communist Party. All right, do you agree with that?
I do.
Wow. You see, I just think even hawks like me are aware of the wake-up call that came with the hypersonic, and I hope good luck to you, but go get some money from your friends, because the Democrats are going to spend $2 trillion, not a penny for defense, but trillions for Green New Deal. It doesn't make any sense. Congressman Mike Gallagher, remember, the new Brett Favre is named Baker. It's Baker Favre. Talk to you next week. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway, joined by Brian Westbury of First Trust Portfolio, the lead economist for First Trust Portfolio. Follow Brian on Twitter, at Westbury. Brian, it was a lot of fun working with you again in Atlanta last week. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, Hugh, not only was it great to see you in person, it's been too long, but what a fun night that was. Really great to hang out with Herschel Walker.
You've been back on the road for a while longer than the Salem hosts have been. I guess First Trust is back out doing its barnstorming?
We are. We've been out for probably 4 months now, I would guess. Three and a half months for sure.
All right, the big question.
40 cities so far.
I have alerted the audience to the bottom line. Don't sell your stocks for 10 to 12 months. Start looking at real estate. And you named one other investment. I can't remember. Don't buy bonds. That was Brian. That's the one slide Hugh Hewitt of Brian. I see in the Wall Street Journal this morning, in tackling China's real estate bubble, Xi Jinping faces resistance to property tax plan. They have a bubble, Brian. Even Xi admits it. When it bursts, will it hurt us?
Yeah, Hugh, I don't think so. Let me qualify that a little bit. From a macroeconomic point of view, I do not believe that it will damage the U.S. economy in any significant way. Now, if there are companies, there are individuals in the United States who do have investments in China who have tied themselves more closely, and some of them may get hurt. But I just look at what happened in Japan. And I know Japan wasn't truly communist. China is. But Japan directed a lot of its investments from the top.
Big cartelist. Very cartelish. Yeah.
Yes, big business, big banks, big government. And they all decided back in the 60s, basically, that they were going to produce consumer goods and sell them to the world, especially to the United States. And it worked because they actually did it pretty well, and they were the first ones there. It's almost like who made the first cell phone, you know, anyway, they won for a while until they couldn't execute it anymore, because eventually these big government, you know, decisions get it wrong. And I would argue that's exactly what's happening in China. Yeah, let's build apartments. The government was letting people do things, but it was directing those activities. And eventually that top-down approach doesn't work. You need entrepreneurs to steer resources in a different direction. And I guess a perfect example would be here in the United States. You know, Motorola was the one that made all those flip phones that everybody thought were the coolest phones out there. They led the phone market until they didn't. And if it's just one company, your economy goes along fine. If it's the entire economy, because the government has been directing everything, then you collapse. And so anyway,
what is the exposure, though, if that happens? I really do think they're in for a huge, like a 2007 and 8 real estate dive in China that we had in the United States. I think they're in for that. What's the real world impact on our markets? Will if they get a fever, do we catch a cold?
Yeah, that's like that phrase came really probably from before anyway, before even Japan. But I remember it around Japan in the 80s all the time. And Japan collapsed in 1989. They peaked in 89, collapsed. The stock market was at 40,000, went below 10,000. And the United States boomed in the 1990s. And now what people will say is, well, we're more closely tied to China. And, you know, people produce there, we buy stuff there, but we've been moving our supply chain out of China for a long time. This will not be the same impact on the U.S. We do not, our banks do not have exposure to Chinese real estate like they did to U.S. real estate. You know, there might be a hedge fund that's got a lot of money in China.
Well, I think there's going to be. I think that there are some very, very wealthy people who are going to be very, very screwed by this. Will that impact us as they get margin calls?
I don't. The reason 2008 spread is because of what we call mark-to-market accounting. And I promise I will not go into what that
is. You only have 30 seconds, so you better hurry.
but what all that did was it multiplied losses throughout the system. And we have now fixed that problem. So no, I, you know, one of the things I, it's just a thought on of mine. George Soros has been writing angry op-eds about China and President Xi and which direction he's going, which makes me think he's pretty invested there. I just wonder.
Interesting. Brian Westbury, always a pleasure to talk to you. I'm going to keep coming back to this story because I just don't think America knows what's about to happen over either militarily or economically in the CCP and to its members and its Politburo. I'll continue talking about it. Stay tuned to the third hour of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about American standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway, standing by for Senator Bill Hagerty from Tennessee. Gives me a chance, though, to remind you all I'll be in Ohio on Sunday night. FM 98.9, The Answer, will be hosting the debate of six senatorial would-be Republican nominees. I'll be moderating that debate. There are six very serious candidates in Ohio. Should be a lot of fun. They all want to join. The numbers, along with Bill Hagerty, my guest, Senator Hagerty from Tennessee. Good to talk to you, Senator. Good morning.
As always, Hugh, it's great to be with you. Thanks.
I'm interested, Senator. You're a lot. You're featured heavily in the book by David Drucker, In Trump's Shadow, your 2020 campaign, and Senator Cotton's great efforts to help you out in that campaign. And you, everyone will go read it. I'll talk to David tomorrow. But for these candidates that I'm going to talk to, these six Ohio Republicans, what's the best advice as a candidate who just went through basically Trump's GOP, the Trump era's GOP nominating process? What's the most important thing for them to focus on if they want to win the nomination?
I think you have to realize this is an endurance test of an incredible proportion. They have to be ready to fight. And they have to be ready to win. They need to speak clearly to their voters, and they need to stay on the road every minute of every day.
Now, I believe the party has coalesced, as does David Drucker, around conservative, combative constitutionalism, standing up and fighting for what we believe in, and in the recognition that the second Cold War is underway. Do you agree with both those propositions, Senator?
I do. And I say this, that one of the things that first inspired me about President Trump when he was still a candidate was his clear and you know, very forceful vision on China. I've had experience in the region of Asia. I'd lived in Japan before, dealt with China. President Trump was the first back in 2015 to really call China out. And if you look at what's happened today, Hugh, you'd ask me American today, and America will tell you, and the average American will tell you that China is a massive concern for us, a security threat, an economic threat, a military threat. That was not well understood or appreciated when President Trump began to beat that drum.
Now, Senator, this morning in the Financial Times, there's a story. America's political and business elites no longer agree on China. There's also a story on Xi's property bubble that he's got a real problem. And there's also a story on the front page of The Washington Post by Ellen Nakashima, that the Cold War is out in the open now. They're building strategic assets all over the place. I asked Senator Cotton yesterday, I ask you, any chance of getting one Democrat to put some money for defense into this $2 trillion they're about to spend? Won't Angus King or Jack Reed do anything about our strategic capacity vis-a-vis China, especially after the hypersonic launch?
You know, I talked with Senator Inhofe just yesterday on this topic, and the hypersonic launch is a new era altogether that creates a threat that surprised our intelligence community. It's a threat that we need to really ramp up our R&D and defense expenditure on. And I've got to believe that Democrats would be hard pressed not to step up, particularly folks like Jack readings you mentioned, Angus King, possibly. But I've got to believe there's going to be an appetite to do this now.
Well, you see, every single Democrat has the opportunity to go into the majority leader's office and say, Chuck, I need some of this trillions from my shipyards or from my hypersonic missile facilities, or for the F-21 for that matter, the B-21, or for the Columbia-class nukes. Has anyone done that yet? I mean, they're having a bargaining war between Bernie and Joe Manchin on what to spend. Where's Jack Reed? Where's Angus King?
Well, the war that they're having has been a private war. We hear little bits and pieces creep out. They're not talking to Republicans right now. They're talking amongst themselves. But I hope that this voice is making it to the table. What we're seeing is a party that's in complete disarray right now. But this is an area, particularly given the most recent news that you highlighted, this threat from China is stepping up. It's not going away. They've made it clear that by 2049, they want to dominate the world, and they're taking every step they can to do it right now.
Now, Senator Hagerty, you're on Foreign Affairs, and I made the assertion earlier to Congressman Gallagher. I think their ultimate goal is not just Taiwan, but the Finlandization of the world, going back to the era when the Soviet Union simply dominated Finland. Do you think the CCP wants to dominate the world in the way that the USSR dominated Finland?
Well, they've taken a different tact at it because they've used their economic might as a means to reach all across the planet already. I mean, we've seen it with their Belt and Road Initiative. They have taken huge positions in Africa, huge positions in Central and Latin America. I mean, this isn't just about their backyard. They've already moved out on a global basis economically. What we've also seen is corporations willing to move back there.
I was going to say, I think we've already seen the Finlandization of Hollywood and the NBA. And yeah. Senator Cotton yesterday raised the prospect that there might be the Finlandization of American media because of dependency on Chinese dollars. Do you see that?
We do see it and are very concerned about it. And even if you look at the financial institutions here, for example, that are being pressed harder and harder every day by the Biden administration to impose ESG requirements on their lending activities and things of that nature. Yet you also see these same institutions moving full speed ahead in China, not applying the same sorts of conditions on them, allowing human rights violations to occur, that type of thing. We're seeing a hypocrisy evolve here that really is demonstrating and underscoring China's ability to get their way despite what our morals and rules may be here in America.
Now, I know the average Tennessean is a constitutional conservative. It's a very red state now. Are they national security conservatives in the way that the Committee for the Present Danger emerged before Reagan? Do we have that sort of movement going on in the Republican Party?
I'll tell you what was palpable to me. When I went home as Afghanistan fell, veterans from every corner of the state, and we have a large number of veterans. You know the 101st Airborne is
yes.
situated there in Tennessee. Many have retired there. We have the National Gold Medal a museum situated in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I was there with gold medal winners and recipients. It was palpable, the embarrassment that Tennesseans felt over the collapse of Afghanistan, the fact that we'd been in there for 20 years, that they had had sons, daughters, husbands. They'd been served there themselves. They fought. They lost blood and treasure there. For what? For Biden to give it all up for a press release? I mean, there was a palpable anger there, and there's an embarrassment that is of epic proportion. We've never seen something like this, a failure of this nature. And even though Tennessee is an interior state, we have a pride in America. We understand that a strong America is a successful America. And I felt it very, very strongly that Tennesseans are very much in support of a strong national defense.
So in the 1960 presidential campaign, the Nixon-Kennedy debates, they were all, a lot of it was about Taiwan and the missile gap. I'm sure you remember the history. You're too young to have heard it. But the history was Kennedy alleged a missile gap. The Democrats ran as the party of strength against a weakness that had occurred under Eisenhower and Nixon. Is there a missile gap right now? And does any Democrat that you know care about it enough to do something right now?
Well, we've got to do something about it right now. And I think it's incumbent on us. Tom Cotton is a strong voice on this, as you mentioned. And it's incumbent on us to make that point clearer and clearer every day. Again, I was speaking with Senator Inhofe, who is a ranking member on the Armed Services Committee. He gets this very clearly. And we're going to continue to push hard, very hard on this. And I think that we'll see Democrats come around to the realization that we really do have a gap We've got to step up and fix it. We've got to make investments in R&D. We've got to make investments in the latest technology. We've got to streamline the whole procurement process, which is sclerotic and a real challenge for us to make the type of technology investment, successful investment that we need to make in the pace that we need to make it.
Well, I agree with all that. It just seems to me that if the Democrats are serious, they will not spend another $2 trillion like they did earlier this year and not spend some of it, a significant amount of it, on enduring national defense investments. And yet I don't believe there's a dollar. Is there even a dollar in this bill that you know of for defense?
Again, the Republican side hasn't shown us, but I've gone over what the House side has put in, and the answer is no. In fact, what they're talking about on a after-inflation basis is essentially a disinvestment in our defense. There's a small increase, but inflation is at such a high rate right now that on a net basis after inflation, it translates into an actual decrease in defense spending.
Well, good luck to you in persuading you and Senator Inhofe, persuading your colleagues, Senator Reid. I mean, he's the chairman, right? He could get something.
Yes.
He could get something if he wanted it.
That's right. That's right. And I think that conversation is underway and will continue to tighten, particularly in light of the news that you just mentioned with China's testing of the hypersonic technology.
I hope it resonates. Certainly, it seems like big media has noticed it today. Senator Bill Hagerty from Tennessee, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you, Senator.
Likewise.
From Tennessee, Alliance Defending Freedom has been doing a lot of good because they've got great lawyers across the country, including the volunteer state. Will you volunteer to help the Alliance Defending Freedom? Their banner is over at HughHewitt.com. It has to load. Please make a contribution. I need a few $1,000 contributors, people who can afford to do it. Keep the first freedom intact so that the country can talk about issues like this and not become Finlandized. We need the Alliance Defending Freedom to protect speech on campuses, churches, and communities. They do so at the banner at HughHewitt.com. Please go and be generous right now. Come right back. I'll update you on the markets next. It's morning in D.C. Stay tuned.
Uptown got its hustlers. The Bowery got its bums. 42nd Street got Big Jim.
Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway live. Our Big Jim is Garrity the Indispensable. He has been for pretty much the 2 decades I've been on the air. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh.
I want to, since I saw you at John Andrazik's concert, I've been thinking about asking you this question. I know you're a dad. I'm vaccinated. The fetching masseuse is vaccinated. We both had boosters. My three kids are vaccinated. My three grandchildren will be vaccinated. They're all in single digits as soon as they are eligible. And everyone will get boosters all the time. I just think that's the smart choice for healthy families with no underlying condition. Do the Garrities approach this the same way?
Yes. And I'm not going to confirm or deny anything. I'm just going to observe that I know of many parents in Authenticity Woods, which is the nickname for my Fairfax County neighborhood, who had 11-year-olds or 11 and a half, or who were knocking on the door of 12, and who did not want to wait until, I guess now the word is sometime next month is a possibility. For a lot of the past year, we were hearing midwinter, so maybe December, maybe January. So they just went in and said, yes, my kid is 12. They weren't really checking, birth certificates or anything like that. And they got their kids vaccinated at age 11. But I cannot confirm or deny any particular parents who said that.
All right. So let me tell you what I think is going on here is that Ron Klain just tweeted out it's coming. And that's great. That's good news. And responsible parents will run down and do it. And I want to make this argument and see if you agree with it, because you know this community better than I do. I'm 65 years old. You're in the middle of it. The downside of getting COVID isn't COVID for all but a handful of kids. It's a bad cold. It's a cough. For all but 500 children in the United States, that's the case. But the downside is missing school. And when you're quarantined or you get COVID, you've got to stay away for months, given how it runs through a family. It's absolutely, we can't afford any more of this, Jim Garrity.
Yeah, there's been a lot of pushback. I'm hearing less of it now than when the school year first began. It gives a molecule of credit to the school districts here in Northern Virginia, but also like in the whole broader D.C. area. First of all, they were very slow to reopen last year. I guess both my sons went back. One went back in early March last year. One went back to late March. First, it was 2 days a week, and then about a month, maybe 5-6 weeks later, they went to 4 days a week. And this year, thankfully, they started a little bit early in August. It was back 5 days a week. And generally, it's been smooth. You know, on Fridays, we get our update. There have been 2 cases found in your school or 3 cases or something like that. It's been pretty manageable. But what some folks, particularly, I guess, I was hearing over in Maryland, is if anybody came to class with any degree of sniffles, a lot of schools were just like, you know what, everybody go home. Everybody in the class, go home. We're doing remote learning. We're doing distance learning. Even before the COVID test came out, came back positive. And so you basically had reopened schools in theory, but functionally they were continuing to be closed. And obviously this is driving parents crazy. And if you're wondering, hey, you know, why are workers not returning to the workforce, or why are women still slow returning to the workforce and things like that, I can't help but get the feeling that not knowing if your kid's going to, you know, if your kid's school is going to be open.
Oh, this is a good point. This is a good point.
I mean, you may, you know, the other thing was also the question of, okay, let's say you haven't tested positive, but somebody in your kid's class was, everybody's wearing masks, but everybody knows kids start fiddling with their masks or something like that. They're not 100% perfect. What's a reasonable amount of time to have kids stay home? And at first, I think a lot of the school districts were thinking like 2 weeks. And I think a lot of folks just said, come on. That's really, you know.
By the way, Jim, that is, in fact, still operative policy at other places in Virginia. Yeah. And it's causing chaos. But I had not considered how people who had disengaged from the economy in order to take care of their kids might be unwilling to reengage until they know their kids can actually go to school. I really hadn't thought about that. That's a very, very smart point as to why we have so many unfilled jobs.
You know, it is a one of the things that was really fast, you know, I'm sure every parent who's called into your program over the last 2 years has observed. In mid-March, suddenly you can't get a babysitter. You have to quarantine. Even if your work was open, even if you were an essential worker, boy, you hope you have a spouse who can stay home and take care and watch your kids. And this whole, you know, the idea of like our entire economy was just based on this idea that, it, you know, right around the time when I finish this phone call with you, Hugh, I'm going to walk down with my younger son to the school bus. He's going to get on the school bus. My older son's going to be there till, you know, mid-afternoon. My younger son will get home a little bit later. And during that time, I can be working at home. I can go into work. You know, but just parents have 8 hours or so, or 7 hours, whatever amount of time in the middle of the day where they can go and do work. And if your kid is homesick, well, you can't do that. You don't have that option. And for the past 2 years, the question, and of course, every day, listeners to your program know, our school board is literally made of snowflakes because they are afraid of any snowflake, and they will cancel school if the dew point gets too low. I'm exaggerating slightly, but, you know, Northern Virginia, we freak out about any possibility of snow. Now, National Review has always been very laid back and very easygoing about the needs of parenting and stuff like that. But a lot of parents, like, you know, there's a flurries, and all of a sudden school's canceled. And all of a sudden you got to say to work, hey, I can't come in today because I can't get a sitter and I can't get anybody to watch my child. You know, there's been this giant fundamental disconnect between the decision making of schools and when they feel like being open and when they feel like something has happened in which they can't be open.
And this is so on point.
And the expectations of work.
You know, when I was a lad, the two magic words were lake effect. When lake effect snow was coming, day off, lake effect, you know, Northeastern Ohio shuts down. In Washington, D.C., there are like 30 different words for lake effect. But I'm not living this. I'm not living. COVID quarantine is now the new lake effect.
If it's a blizzard, everyone's like, okay, well, you know, the whole area shuts down. But when it's a very mild snowfall, schools close, but other businesses are like, no, we're staying open. Nobody's, you know, like you feel ridiculous as a parent. And maybe in light of the Pete Buttigieg news, this is like one of my podcast co-hosts, Mickey White, made this fantastic point, where she made this observation that every working mother, or almost every working mother, is paranoid about the perception of her coworkers that she's not working hard enough. That she, you know, oh my goodness, I don't want anybody thinking I'm not pulling my own weight. I'm going to take maternity leave, but I'm going to stay in touch with the office. I'm going to call in and check in. And, you know, they just wouldn't do what Pete Buttigieg did of just, you know, walking away as this crisis is getting worse. Look, I'm glad Pete Buttigieg is a father. I hope he enjoys his special time and all that stuff. But there was this observation that, like, most working women just have this, like, down to their bone marrow sense
of, oh, God, I don't want anyone thinking I'm lazy, or I don't want anyone thinking that I'm not working hard enough.
I'll tell you what.
Well, it wasn't a factor in this one.
Pete Buttigieg had better stay away from military spouses, with deployed spouses. He really should not. They never stop. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Okay, let me ask you about the second big issue. I hope you write about kids and COVID vaccines and what people should do, because I don't have any actual authority in that area. I'm not going to make a decision on behalf of a child. I know what my grandkids are going to do, but that's because their mom decided to do that. Let me ask you about something that I'm very happy about. This morning, Tom Friedman wrote a hardline column on China, basically Second Cold War stuff. Financial Times.
Tom Friedman wanted to be China for a day.
Well,
they were awesome. We sucked. That was his message for years.
Well, it's over. The Second Cold War is upon us. And I believe after reading David Drucker's book, and I read you, and I just follow the Republican Party, we're not going to nominate anyone in the Republican Party for any office unless they are a combative constitutional conservative who believes that we're in the Second Cold War. Do you agree with me?
Yeah. Yeah. And what's more is, I Joe Biden back in 2019, May, was saying, they're not bad folks. These guys aren't competition for us. Now, thankfully, he seems to have changed his opinion on that. But I think, Joe Biden's default setting was probably established in the 70s or 80s, or maybe the 90s at the latest. And he just can't get his head around the fact that China is convinced they were the preeminent leaders of the world until about the late 1800s, and then things went wrong with the Boxer Rebellion. And they are returning to their natural role as the leaders of the world. They are meant to do this. This is destiny. This is what they are, they have a duty to lead the rest of the world away from our decadent and foolish and nonsensical ideas of democracy and free market.
I think you're right, Jim. I think this is middle kingdom hubris, but that it becomes their effort to Finlandize everything. And this is a new term for a lot of my listeners who are under the age of 50. They won't know what Finlandization means. But it's when you dominate a region. I think the CCP, I think Xi wants to Finlandize the world. They've got Hollywood and the NBA, and they're moving out.
Well, I mean, Hugh, if there's anything we know about them, is they are extraordinarily competent and extraordinarily driven, except when it comes to labs. The labs aren't very secure. They spill stuff all the time, don't have great safety. But like, what's the worst that could happen? It's not like they're going to kill a couple million people around the world just by being reckless.
Well, that
already happened.
All right. So here's my question. We agree. The Financial Times, the Washington Post, Tom Friedman agree. How can we spend another $2 trillion, which will take us up to about $8 trillion of spending in 2 years, and not spend any money on defense and strategic after the hypersonic launch, after our Sputnik moment that nobody noticed?
So today's Morning Jolt, which I'm almost ready to send off to the editors, is all about this whole Build Back Better thing. And the idea that this is just completely disconnected from what the actual problems facing the country are. And apparently Biden's going to be in Scranton today. And I'm sure his message is going to be, this is going to create jobs. This is a great jobs bill. We have 10.4 million unfilled jobs in the country right now. We have a worker shortage. And he's talking about, great news, I'm going to dump a whole lot more money in the economy. So that's going to help with inflation. Don't worry. Lots of federal spending always works out well. And I'm going to create a whole bunch more jobs we need to fill when we have 10.4 million and a worsening worker shortage. Oh, and a supply chain problem. Oh, and a border problem. Oh, and Afghanistan.
Oh, and let me tell you, a missile gap. We haven't had missile gaps since 1960. And that time, the Democrats were using it an axe against Eisenhower and Nixon. Well, the missile gap is real. It's the hypersonic missile gap. And we're behind, Jim Garrity. And I can't believe there isn't at least one Democrat who's going to walk into Chuck Schumer's office and say, we're sending $50 billion into my state to build these missiles or more submarines or whatever strategery we need. Is there even one who wants the money for their state? They get it.
You say, Hugh, how many Democrats were going into Chuck Schumer's office and screaming about Afghanistan until Kabul fell?
Angus King might be in there saying, Angus is pretty smart. He may slide in there in the last minute and say, Bath Iron Works up in Maine.
He'll want it all in submarines. He'll want it all in all in stuff.
Fine by me. We need more of the above. We need it all. That's what we say about energy production. All of the above. Garrity, how do people sign up for the Morning Jolt?
At nationalreview.com, just click on the left side under newsletters, and it also gets posted online every day. But a lot of people prefer getting it in their email account, because that way your boss can't see you're reading National Review.
And getting smarter every day. Make sure that your children are reading Jim Garrity as well. Garrity, the indispensable. Thank you, my friend.
three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.